Accession number 9364, reel 17.
Mr. Bessel, reel 17. You were saying you went back to Bisley?
Yes, as usual. And there were two dear old maids there. And I was so anxious to have my wife with me. I said to them, you'll have to put me up. And they did. They were a couple of school teachers. It's funniest put up you ever know. They were most kind. They said to me, I said, how much do I owe you now? Well, I'm quite happy to pay. I want to pay you and that's it. They said, well, you've had 2 penny worth of cheese. Half pound sugar. You've had half pound of sugar. And I think, oh my goodness, what beautiful people they were. And, of course, we were good to them too, but they were good to me. And we had one glorious fortnight up there. I came back. I'd been away 2 years and 8 months. And they said to me in Eastleigh Barracks, we want you to take a signal platoon and go to Alexander with the MBDO. And it occurred to me why Captain, I'll forget his name, the captain had said to me, I probably would take that signal badge down. Of course, I hadn't finished my punishment. I'd done 2 years and 8 months away from wife and kids. So I was to go away for another year in Alexandria, Egypt. But not much you can do when you've got a pension pending. You've got to either qualify for that pension or sacrifice it. Which is partly why I was so interested in building the shop there next door, which I never got the benefit from anyway, because it gives you a fresh focus on a living, on somewhere to live, because I could have gone out to a mate of mine who was quite influential, had plenty of money, Dyers of Milk people up here, and but had I done so, it wouldn't have made any difference. I'd still been in the front line directly war was declared. They said, well, come on up you go. So I qualified for the pension and so I went away with my wife and kids again to Alexandra. And we were on the Lancashire, a troop ship. And we had to put signal communications right around Alexandra, which I suppose were used during the war, because Alexandra became kind of a base for the Eastern Mediterranean fleet. Byron was sunk there, poor Chippy. I think I'll be safer here, Reggie said. I said, yeah, I hope so, Chippy. And Byron was blown up, and he died, of course. Anyway, we went ashore there and had a tent in the desert and started to begin to do this submarine cable and all the various lines and telephones that had to be rigged. I had a section there, my section, we used to jump, sit all over the lorry, on the bonnet, everywhere else, and go off and build, dig these trenches for the white ants, seat the telephone poles, if you put it on above the earth, apparently. You had got to bury your cable there. It must be buried. And we had certain surplus in... Incidentally, I had my good conduct medal while I was in barracks, you know, just in front of King George the Fifth Guard in Eastleigh, and Major Williams took my wife and I to this officer's mess there, which was full of gold braid because the war was going to be, was pending, they knew it, all the brains knew what was happening. And I said to my wife, that, drink that up, dear, we'll get out of the way, we're in the way here, there's gold braid everywhere. And Major Williams, who was such a gentleman, he turned around and he said, port should be drunk slowly. Don't hurry your wife. If you'd like another drink, you have one. You stop here. In other words, he was very, very gently, which was characteristic of him. However, we did eventually, I got this medal. Going back to Alexandra, we landed from Lancashire. We had a bridge building party. We could raise at that time, we're putting bridges up, which I wonder whether it wouldn't have been better than the Mulberry Harbour on D-Day. They were brilliant at it. They could put these piers up in 24 hours and land and fire a 6-inch gun. And that would be a pier that would take a 6-inch gun, which is wants a bit of weight, you know. However, we were the MDP, we went out there and did this. And the signal side of it, we're getting ready for war for Alexandra.
What's an MDP?
Bridge building people, repository people they were. I don't know what it stood for, honestly. They were at Port Cumberland and they could put this, they could lift all kinds of repository, much like building the pyramids, you know. They could really do this stuff. They were kind of engineers in but apparently the Mulberry Harbour was more extensive possibly than they could have done, because I watched the Mulberry Harbour being pulled into position and it was marvellous. Of course, all constructed at home, which was quicker, you see. It's a phase you go through as a corps. The engineers, for instance, were all railways. They up at Borden, they got their own railway. They had their own railway. That's dispensed with now. They don't consider it necessary. But the engineers were clever at creating railways and stations and goodness knows what. Of that period, and I suppose we were of that period doing these bridges, which they dispense with latterly. We, in turn, were the signal side, the post office of Alexander, and we had one fellow bitten by a scorpion underneath your tent. Sand is not sand, it's dust, it's dirt, dry dirt. The Sahara is dry dirt, not golden sand. When you're home here, you think of it as golden sand, like, say, the Southend-on-Sea. It's not. It's flipping dirt, and it's fine, peppery dust. And when you put a bed down at night in the tent, you put the apron of the tent, of a bell tent, you peg it down with large stones in order to keep the dust out, because you don't want the dust on your blankets. But in the morning, you lift those stones up, you'll find a centipede and a scorpion under all of them, where the scorpion and the centipede is appreciative of the dust. Thinks I'll get underneath the stone for my habitat, where he does. We had one sergeant of Marines, used to stutter, Bunny Austin, and he had this, he used to get an adhesive taped in, you know, we had a hob there, kind of a hob, hot hob, and he'd put this tin, he'd catch these things and put his tin in, these centipede and the scorpion in the tin, and he'd say, come on, pick up your feet, come on, get moving, imagine. And he'd use his knife on them as they went round. I suppose fear of the things made him want to massacre them all the time. We had one Marine try to cut his finger off because he'd been poisoned by a scorpion. The asp, of course, is there too, but I didn't see any asps.
Were you making any preparations for war by this time?
Yeah, one bomber. One bomber. When they reckoned that the defence of Malta, before the siege, was non-existent. Non-existent.
But when you were in Alexandria, what year was that, that you were in Alexandria?
About 38, I should say.
Did you see any evidence out there of preparations for war?
Well, no. What preparations you saw were the Egyptian army, such as it was, which was nil, practically, you know, they were trying to make themselves into an army. The fleet, of course, always the fleet. The fleet had no air protection at all the first part of the war, none at all. It was sad to see it. We were there and no doubt felt pretty powerful in a way. We had a disregard for the Italians completely, but of course no one in his right mind underestimated the Germans, and their intentions were so clear. I mean, there was no question of we might go to war, we might. It was obvious what they were doing. They were so intent. The fleet would come into Alexandria and had a number of boxing matches there and that kind of thing. I think they were kind of regarding Alexandria as the new base, a possibly an alternative to Malta. The as I've read history books since, Malta was almost given up. It's a 28 mile from the enemy now. The Navy wanted to keep it, and no doubt the Navy stopped Rommel to a great extent. When you think the K Force sunk two armored divisions in 10 minutes. An awful lot of trouble to get two armored divisions together and see it go beneath the waves. No, war was coming and I knew it. And I'd been now 4 years away from my wife and kids. And I thought I'd love to see them.
Had you been home at all in that time?
No. Yes, been home for about 6 weeks, during which time they let me go to Bisley and gave me a medal and said, now go on, view.
How did you think the war would affect you, the coming war?
I knew, dear. Somehow, I don't know, I knew that I would be in Malta. I knew that we'd be all right. I knew. I don't know how I knew. It was something mystical, something not right, not actual, not practical.
Was your term of service with the Marines nearly up by 1939?
41. I should have been up in 41. And I know we went to the cafe in the Bella Vista in Alexandria, and we were a flippin' nuisance. Three of us, three sergeants. We went in this shower. We were just that with devilment, you know, and this Bella Vista. Of course, all the cafes in Alexandra, they had gilly gilly men. And they make a rat come at you. Say, oh, there's a rat coming at your sleeve. And you think, my God, all this nonsense they were up to, the gilly gilly. We had one young officer, he had a basket, which you sat in this basket, and they could put swords through, and as they pushed the sword through, apparently the chap in the basket had to bend the sword round it so that it didn't go through him. And they had this young officer in this bath, and he was shouting, let me out, let me out. Of course, it seemed to me that these other Marines were out for a devilment, and they possibly had a drink or two, and they were pushing these swords in. Oh, my God, you thought you were going to die. Anyway, this cafe we went to, the Bella Vista, was a high-class cafe, apparently. They had a cabaret there, and we decided that if the turn was bad, really bad, and the poor devil hadn't got much of a cheer, we were going to clap like hell and create ours. That was a good show, that was good. And if they were reasonably good, we would be just the opposite. We'd say, no, no good. We were a damn nuisance. I wonder if they hadn't slung us out. Possibly they were scared.
Whereabouts were you when war was actually declared?
Malta.
When were you sent to Malta then?
What happened, I thought I'm going to take a chance. I should never see my wife and kids. I've had 4 years away from home. Over four. 4 years, 3 years, 2 years and 8 months and another period of a year. No, 4 years. And I'm going to volunteer for prison work. In Malta. Nobody wanted it. You can live dangerously and see your wife, or you can live and die with the rest of the poor devils choking oil in the sea. And I will see my wife. So I volunteered for Malta.
When was that?
Just prior to the war. About a year, 18 months before.
Why did nobody want the job as prison officer?
Because they knew Malta was going to be blown sky high. It was going to be an inferno. And nobody wanted it, and nobody wanted particularly to take their wife there. I thought, I'll take a chance. We'd been so happy there previously.
How did your wife feel about it?
She thought we're all mad. I was so glad to see her that the woman next door used to say they'd go in shopping, her wife and two girls, Deb Belletta. And the woman next door used to say, she'll come in a minute, don't worry. Keep on looking out the door for her and the two girls. And it was sad to think that she had observed that I'd be cooking the dinner on a primer stove, because all primer stove there, and she would say that she'll come in a minute. She will come. Don't worry. One fine day, and a butterfly.
Do you think this was a problem with Navy service, the fact that you had to spend so long away from your wives?
This is what I pointed out. I told you about that I fought the case there where Admiral Cunningham wrote on this memo, this matter has got great ramifications. What are you going to pen men in cages? What is it Samuel Johnson says? A ship is a prison. Anybody that calls it anything else is a fool. A ship is a prison. ship is a prison.
How did the other men cope without women?
Well, I mean, they all had their loves and their hopes and their dreams. Every man is human, every woman is. We're humanity. And this is why I believe so much in Callender's history. I read it. It was the book issued to us, Callender's Naval History. I told you about it. You have not seen it. Never heard of it. And yet he's so right. This man is really clever. How the Rhine Delta affected humanity. We're coming to a phase now when, as I see it, every one nation could make enough merchandise for the world with the ship. Because, consequently, trading and fighting in trade could be resolved. You simply say, well, you'll have to go on holiday. There's no work for you. So you'll have to go on holiday in Majorca or somewhere. You'll have to learn to play tennis. If you can't play tennis, write a book or do something or learn music or do something. But don't...
When you applied for the prison job, did you have to have an interview?
Oh, no. They just decided, I suppose, that somebody wanted to go there. They'd be want somebody there. You had this great fleet, of which there are bound to be people who get into trouble. And
was your lack of experience in that sort of work a problem?
Lack of natural being a bully, possibly. I'm not a bully. I suppose, really, it's a job there. You've got to have be a disciplinarian, ruthless, don't you think? I mean, it's not a job that you would put normally put a musician in, or an artist, or a man who's got some kindness in his nature. On the other hand, if you don't employ brains in it, you're going to come down to mischief in the end. Look at the case with Ireland. What a state. What a state.
And did you know what sort of work you'd be doing? Did you know being a prisoner?
Oh, yes, I guessed it. I guessed I'd have to be a disciplinarian. Imagine. Try and imagine the work you're doing. You're going to pick coir in the afternoon. You pick coir and you don't speak. You just look to your front, they look to their front. What good you do it? Are you influencing their mind? No. I used to take maps across. Say, look, there's going to be a bloody great war, so and so and so and so. And this would possibly happen. I am handing you authority. You're now as a god because you know right from wrong.
What sort of offenders were they in the prison?
They were all the same, except the Irish. The Ireland has been a problem that nobody's handled. I was conscious of this. I knew a smattering of history. I knew, for instance, about the potato famine and so on, and Connell and Burke and company. as reasonably, I suppose, intelligent. And I knew, for instance, this terrible business you're getting on to with this IRA and that, how difficult to handle. And I don't wish anybody harm, but I don't... It's something that is more difficult than everyone could understand. With the Irish and the Yank, and the Yank supporting the Irish because there's nobody greater than them.
When you were in Malta, were they all British people in the prison?
Oh, yes. All British regiments. The prince, you should get a chap inside for deserting. One chap went to... He jumped on the liner, you see. He was dull, he had no great intelligence. And he didn't know which way this boat was going. And he had got on a boat that he thought was coming to England. He was going east. And he got around and he enjoyed himself with the passengers and had a meal in, you know, with them, and he was listened to them talking, and the one woman said, "I'm going to Victoria." And he said, yes, I'm going to Victoria. He meant Victoria Station, not Victoria. And of course, Wassell, his name was, I'll never forget, he joined. I used to skylight, I used to laugh to myself and think to myself, "You mug."
What was the penalty for desertion at that time?
Well, 90 days, I suppose he had. 90 days, or 28 days. 90, I would think. Anyway, I said, "You were going to Victoria?" "Yeah," he said, "I was going to..." But the Irish were a problem. The Irish were different. Only somebody who was subtle could have dealt with them. You've either got to be clever, or no good beating the big stick and asking for trouble. The Irish had ingrained into them, that they had to hate us. And the rotten part about it was that the Englishmen, he thought he didn't hate anybody. And consequently, whereas one bloke would do you harm, you wouldn't do him any harm, and you were the mug that was... I dealt with a lot of them, and I had to handle them personally. And I was the mug that did it.
How big was the prison?
3-storey high. Quite big. Of course, it was built in the olden days. You've got to try and realise it was in the dockyard itself, and subject to the bombs, we were, as far as this school down here is away from this house, from 5 Dock. Now, 5 Dock would have possibly 200 bombers on it 3 times a day, which is rather a lot, and it's a bit uncomfortable. Can be worrying. The prison itself then was in the dockyard. 2 men were killed, locked up. I would not lock a man up under bombing. They either came with me and took the chance with me, or that was it. I wouldn't lock them up. 2 men were killed, locked up. One chap I had, LaFurla, he wanted to get away from the dockyard. They were all... It was kind of a punishment zone. Towards the end, I was sent to Leucodrome to take prisoners on the drone because they wanted to get off of it. 2 regiments filling in bomb holes, which is rather a lot. And